It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the U.S. House is set to vote on a bill to extend the debt ceiling tonight. We get the latest on the deal and what it means. First, hikers are hitting Wisconsin's Ice Age Trail this weekend as part of the Mammoth March. In the event, hikers aim to reach up to 30 miles in a single 12-hour span. This is the first time the long-distance hike is coming to the state. It's intended, organizers say, to be a challenge, but not necessarily a competition. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like big hikes? What would you like to know about long-distance organized hiking? Have you traveled the Ice Age Trail's Kettle Moraine State Forest Branch before? And you could share your favorite place to hike here in Wisconsin. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Michael Matruder is founder of Mammoth March. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Can you talk about the inspiration for Mammoth March and why you're bringing them to the United States?
Yeah, so I'm German, and long distance hiking and hiking events are a real big thing in Europe for the last 5 to 7 years. And I was wondering before I brought it to the U.S. why that never happened in the U.S. because there's tons and millions of hiking trails and avid hikers, and I never found an answer to that, which led me to the idea of putting it up myself, and that literally happened 2021 when I came up with the idea of Mammoth March and hosting long distance hikes across the U.S.
As I understand it, Michael, this is not a race; it's a community event. Can you make that distinction for us?
Absolutely, yeah. So a lot of people mistaken it by being a race or just another event where you run or your time's being tracked and that. And that's not what we do. So technically, as you mentioned in the intro, it's a 20-mile hike in 8 hours or even a 30-mile hike in 12 hours. We don't really enforce that time. So if people finish later, they still get their medal. They still get, the award and the certificate. So it's technically just a challenge that you, beat those 20 or even 30 miles and accomplish something 99% of our participants have never done before, which is 20 or even 30 miles of, walking and hiking straight. And that's what it when it becomes a community, when you don't compete against others, but together with others during our events.
If someone hasn't done 20 miles or 30 miles in a day, what is your advice to them to prepare themselves for an event like this?
Well, I always say it is not a matter of if you finish, but how you feel after you cross the finish line. So I would say a lot of people are able to finish 20 miles. They should have done a little bit of practice. The question is how will they feel a day, 2 days, a week after the event? And I mean, the best advice is always, when you start preparing and you start walking and hiking, just rack up a few miles the next week. So if you say you're feeling comfortable doing 10 miles, next time you go, make it 12. And the next time you go, make it 14. Pack some supplies and just see how far you can go. And then you don't really have to have walked 20 miles at a stretch or even 30 to compete at the event. It's just like a marathon. Just few people, do a marathon when they practice and prepare for a marathon, because the event itself will have a huge impact on your performance and, the community pushing you, reaching your goals. So I'd say if you manage to get 15 miles together and if you can string 15 miles together, you're perfectly prepared for the event.
Talking to Michael Matruder about the Mammoth March coming to Wisconsin this weekend. Now, this will be the first time, Michael, in Wisconsin this Sunday. How did you settle on the Ice Age Trail's Kettle Moraine State Forest Branch for this event?
Well, we are actually here in Wisconsin right now. We start marking the trails as early as today. We connected with the people from Northern Kettle Moraine a year or so ago, and we found that it's a perfect it has perfect conditions for our event. So we have to check a few boxes like is there sufficient parking space. Are there options for us to set up an aid station to supply people with water, snacks, energy drinks, and stuff like that? Are these, you know, aid stations accessible? And obviously, is it a nice trail? Is it scenic? Because we don't want to have people walking on the sidewalk. So Wisconsin and the Ice Age Trail, and in particular the Northern Cable Moraine, checked a lot, if not all, of those boxes. And, you know, that's when one thing led to another. And that's when we're very excited to be here on Saturday.
And what has the response been from people when you put out the invitation?
Actually, we've been overwhelmed by it, because when we put it out, I think it was around December when we put up the event. It's been sold out since, I think, the last two and a half months now. We have 1,000 people registered, around 150 of them tackling the 30 miles. The rest will do the 20 only. And I think we could have sold easily at least 1,500, 1,600 tickets. We capped it because it's a first-year event. You know, you want to see how smooth it goes. But the response has been absolutely amazing.
And I got to ask you, Michael, as the organizer, are you too busy organizing, or do you get to go on the hikes when you hold these events?
It's a very good question, and I never hiked the event on the day of the event. I'm actually the one seeing the least of my event. I'm technically stuck at the headquarters at our venue, coordinating deliveries and you know, EMT staff members, volunteers. So I'm actually the one who sees the least of the events. But obviously, I've supported and marked the trails, and I've seen quite a lot of the event, but unfortunately not on the day off.
Michael, we'll leave it there. Have a great event, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
That's Michael Matruder, founder of the Mammoth March Long Distance Hiking Challenge. It comes to Wisconsin this Saturday at Kettle Moraine State Forest Northern Unit. Coming up, we'll keep the hiking conversation going. We want to hear from you with suggestions for great hikes around the state. Join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you like to go for a hike, big or small, here in Wisconsin? Do you have a local favorite or maybe a place around the country you've journeyed to for a great hike? Join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. There's more hiking coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation about Wisconsin's scenic trails and hiking opportunities. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite spot to take in the state's natural beauty? Did you go for a good hike over the three-day weekend? Where are you hiking this weekend? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kevin Revelinsky is a travel blogger and author of Hiking Wisconsin, a guide to the state's greatest hikes. You can follow his journeys in Wisconsin and around the world at themadtraveler.com. Kevin, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
I know that it feels like summer. Summer officially starts less than a month from now. On a hot summer day, what do you look for in a good hike?
Shade. For sure, shade. Something close to the water, maybe Lake Superior water, yeah, obviously heat's going to be a factor. I think this summer, with highs already hitting 90 this week in Madison, shade and not too challenging in terms of the up and down.
Let's talk about planning a good hike. I've used your book, actually, Kevin, in my own excursion planning, mapping out courses on different state parks around the state. Can you talk about the planning process as you get ready for a hike? Do you just go and wing it, or do you map it out beforehand?
I'm more of a seat of the pants winging it, like, hey, let's go for a hike now. But, you know, you do need to know what you're getting into. And, you know, are you out for a long hike? You better be prepared. You better have water packed with you. You can't just, especially as we were saying in the heat, just go without your water bottle in hand. And it depends on who's with. Do you have kids in tow? Do you have the dog? Do you have that, you know, the necessary leash for the state parks if you're bringing your dog? You know, it's not just a matter of length. A 10-mile hike is obviously very long, but if it's flat, it's not going to stress you out too much if you're taking your time. But whereas like a 3 mile hike at Devil's Lake that goes up and down is, you know, you might lose some of the people who aren't up for that one.
Now, Kevin, you're a Wisconsin traveler. You're also a world traveler. Be honest with us. How does Wisconsin stack up against the rest of the world when it comes to great places to hike?
You know, I think we're one of the tops, but I am willing to lie to myself because I love my home state. But I've been to Patagonia, and well, when you have, you know, snow covered mountain peaks in the background, that's kind of awesome too. But we do have, I think, just great access to trails and wilderness just right outside the back door. You know, with the Ice Age Trail and the North Country Trail and Shawamigan, and you know, the National Forest is. You know, it's rich with that sort of for that sort of activity, and the Kettle Moraine, as you were mentioning with the previous guest. So,
well, it's you've started naming some names
too.
Definitely.
You know,
Kevin, that's okay, Kevin. You started naming some names there. Can you give us some that are maybe off the beaten path? I think most people, if you like to go for a hike and you like nice sights, you know Devil's Lake State Park in Wisconsin,
sure.
And it's known around the world. What are some that, you know, maybe they're unsung hidden gems around the state that we ought to check out?
Well, hidden gems. Okay, so there's the Lakeshore Trail up at Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, which is not a hidden gem, but I think a lot of people think of paddling there more than hiking. Mm. But that's a nice trail. Not very far from there, south of Cornucopia, is a waterfall called on Lost, Lost Creek. And I think it's number three, Lost Creek number three. They weren't very creative with their names. But it's a very small waterfall out in the middle of the forest. And you can go and actually stand behind it, speaking of keeping cool in hot weather. And I think a lot of people overlook that when they're up there seeing the glorious sea caves. So that's a good one.
And I think I used your book to map out a trail through a Blue Mound State Park, which is really scenic. I really like it, and not as crowded as, say, your Devil's Lake State Park. Do you have any favorite things to share there?
That's a great one because you've got a lot of hiking trail, many miles of it. You've got two observation, towers, and as you said, it's less visited, but it's a little. I think it's a little more rustic. The view is, I don't know, what is it, 25 miles or something to the next state. And there's a part of the park, if I'm remembering my cardinal points here, I think it's the east side of the park that's across the road that I don't think anybody really ever goes over there. Well, I'm exaggerating. Very few people go to that side. And it kind of follows a little creek down a hill into, you know, a grove. And, you know, there's just these...
Oh, yeah.
You're off the beaten trail, even in the same park.
Yeah, so. I highly recommend going along that creek at Blue Mount. I know exactly what you're talking about, Kevin.
It's a good one.
We're talking to Kevin Revelinsky, travel blogger, author of the book Hiking Wisconsin, A Guide to the State's Greatest Hikes. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you looking for a new place to hike around in your neck of the woods? Do you have a point of local pride that you could recommend, maybe take visitors to all the time? What is your favorite place to go for a hike in Wisconsin? Maybe a summertime favorite. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Kevin, you write about hiking and you've also written a lot about camping. Do you have favorite places for combining the two, camping and hiking here in Wisconsin?
Oh, yeah, that's I would say Newport up in Door County because they've got, well over a 14-mile hike there. And you can actually hike into the campsites. So it's not your traditional drive-up sort of situation. And even though you're in Door County, once you get into those trails, you know, there's not that many people around. It's also a dark sky park. So if you're into stargazing, that's an excellent place to be. So you can get both of those in there. And further up on Rock Island, as long as I'm picking on Door County. Copper Falls. That's another great campsite. You know, they've got the campsites are very segregated by brush, even though you might be not so far from your neighbor. It seems like you are. And that's got, you know, several great waterfalls. And again, they've got that, you know, a couple trails that nobody seems to go on that go to another more equally exotic place.
That sounds great. Now, how about people looking for just a short hike? We talked about that mammoth hike earlier. Not everybody's up for that right now. What's a good starter hike in a couple different parts of the state?
Oh, in different parts of the state. Well, I'm best familiar with the really short hikes around Madison, but we've got things that are all within an hour drive. If you keep it under 3 miles, that's a pretty short hike. Here in Madison, we've got the Cherokee Marsh on the north side of town. Places further south, like Magnolia Bluff, where you get another scenic overlook, and a lot of people don't know that that's even there. Any segments of the Ice Age Trail, you can make them as long as you want. Since it's point to point, you just walk as halfway as far as you think you can go and turn around and come back. There's a good Dells of the Eau Claire near Wausau. That's a county park, and you can have a very short hike around the water tumbling over the rocks there. But you can also get on a segment of the Ice Age Trail that approaches from the south. And that's about a 4.7 mile round trip if you're going, all the way to the falls from that trailhead and back.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Carol is with us in Duluth. Carol, hello.
Hi there. I just would like to encourage anybody writing articles or books to be sure to include information about trails that are accessible for handicapped folks. Like my husband's in a wheelchair, and often anything written, I can't tell whether there's any portion of the trail that he could access. So just encouraging people to keep that in mind.
Carol, thanks a lot for the call. I'll point people to the state DNR has an Open the Outdoors section on their website. If you search for accessible recreation and DNR or Open the Outdoors, you can find that. Kevin, do you know resources for accessibility at our state parks and other hiking trails?
Yeah, mostly what you just pointed out, but also some of the hiking guides, and mine included, would mention things that are, if it's a paved path involved. And I consulted with a friend who was wheelchair bound about what is accessible. Sometimes just a paved gravel path is good enough, depending on, the condition of your wheels. So I think beyond the resources of, the list that the state provides, people can kind of determine from the trail description what the surface is and that, if this is going to work out.
Carol, thanks a lot. Great question. Mike is with us now in Dodge County. Mike, hello.
Thanks, Rob, for taking my call. I was just going to tell you about a gem in my county. I live in Dodge County, and we have something called Horicon Ledge. I'm sure people are familiar with Horicon Marsh, but that's great walking. But then there's also a ledge where you can walk around in the cliffs, and it's really nice on a cool day to walk through the caverns and things like that. So. Ooh. Even at the county level, there's some nice parks.
And that's a campground as well, right? The ledges is what
correct.
I'm thinking of. Yeah, that's a good one.
Mike, thanks a lot for that. And he mentions it being cool to go through, the passes and the caverns there. I know things like Parfrey's Glen, if that's open now, there are a lot of nice things where you go down along water and all of a sudden it's much cooler, Kevin, on a hot day.
Yeah, it's a completely different ecosystem. There's different plants growing on the rocks because they have, they enjoy a moist environment and also, like you said, cooler.
Mike, thanks for the suggestion. Dwayne is with us now in Wausau. Dwayne, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. You mentioned Dells of the Eau Claire, which in and of itself is worth the drive just to see the canyons and all the rocks.
Right.
And it's beautiful. But you can hike that around there. We've hiked both sides and come back. And I'm from that area. But you could also commingle it with a trip to up by Granite Peak or the old Rib Mountain, they called it. There's trails all over up in there, and you can hike way around like a quarry back in there, and it's all wood and beautiful, and you can do both in one day, and Granite Peak's one of the highest points in Wisconsin. I don't think it's the highest, but anyway, two birds in one stone.
Dwayne, thanks a lot. Tim's Hill, I think, is going to be our highest point in Wisconsin, Kevin.
That's right. It doesn't seem like it, but, elevation-wise,
doesn't take much.
It doesn't take much, and they got the platform on top, too, so... And I think that's Rib Mountain State Park. if I'm not mistaken. I know they call it Granite Peak now. I guess we the mountain seemed like a hard sell. I don't know. But that's some great hiking there for sure.
It's a Wisconsin mountain. Thanks a lot for that call and that great suggestion. Kevin, do you have hikes in the works for this summer in Wisconsin or beyond, places you're planning to go?
Well, I'm hoping to get back up north again. It's where my family originally is from, and I'll hike to St. Peter's Dome, overlooking with a view all the way out to Lake Superior there, Shawangan Bay, and Morgan Falls is part of that hike. It is part of the North Country Trail, I guess, but we just hike in, go up to the dome, and take in the view. So,
Kevin, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
That's travel blogger Kevin Revelinsky, author of Hiking Wisconsin, A Guide to the State's Greatest Hikes. He joined us for a look at great hikes around Wisconsin, some inspiration. Earlier we heard from the founder of the Mammoth March. That's a big hike coming to Wisconsin this Saturday. You can keep sharing your favorite Wisconsin hiking locations on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Is there a place you go to year after year, or maybe season after season, to watch as things change and develop over the course of the year? Do you have a favorite hiking memory here in Wisconsin? We'd love to hear about it. You can email ideas@wpr.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page and let us know. Coming up after the news, the U.S. House is expected to vote tonight on a bill that raises the national borrowing limit and avoids national and global economic potential crises. We'll find out where that bill stands, what's in it, and what's next, and how it affects us here in Wisconsin. I'm Rob Barrett. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a Great Lakes water expert joins us for a look at laws protecting the lakes as two major diversion projects are in the works for Waukesha and in Joliet, Illinois. Now, June 5th, this coming Monday, is the debt ceiling deadline. That's the date that Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has said the U.S. will no longer be able to cover all of its financial obligations. In other words, the country would be unable to pay all the money it owes. A federal debt default could have a number of pretty heavy consequences, hurting America's credit rating, setting off economic turmoil domestically and potentially around the world, unless Congress is able to raise the national borrowing limit, also known as the debt ceiling. Over the weekend, President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy finally struck a deal over the debt ceiling bill. The House is working to vote on it this evening. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been worried about the default scenario we've been hearing about? What questions do you have about what's in this deal, this bill that would raise the debt ceiling limit? Have you followed the negotiations? Are there other outcomes you would like to see? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Ginger Gibson is senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me back. Glad to be here.
Well, this deal from over the weekend was a long time in the making. Can you recap some of the highlights of what it took to get to where we are today?
Yeah, there were moments where we wondered if we were ever going to get to today when the House is going to vote. They've cleared, they're clearing a rule now, and they were expected to vote tonight, but this goes back months. We can look back to last year when House Republicans won control of the chamber, and we knew this was a thing they needed to do this year. And then we can look to January, when McCarthy won the speakership and what was a really fraught process. It took him 13 ballots to get there, and this was looming ahead as sort of the big test that he was going to face after he secured that. And then we saw one brief conversation between the president and McCarthy in January, where they brought up the debt ceiling, and then nothing, as McCarthy likes to point out, 97 days of which they did not talk about the debt ceiling until we got to this month. And it seemed to then be crunch time. It became apparent that June was the deadline, that they needed to get something done by early June. And the House was able to pass a bill. So we saw the House surprise, sort of defy expectations and get a piece of legislation through that would raise the debt ceiling and sort of do all the things Republicans thought they should get in exchange for raising the debt ceiling: cut spending, get rid of some programs, approve permitting reform, a bunch of different things that they wanted done. And that's really what kicked off the negotiations. And we've been watching weeks of these negotiations behind closed doors. And for those of us that have been in Washington for a while, I've been here over a decade, really just quiet closed door. They weren't leaking. They weren't coming out and telling people what either side said. They're really hashing it out behind closed doors until Saturday night when they came out and said, all right, they have a deal. And so this long process over days and weeks to get an agreement that now it looks like optimistically for them is going to pass through Congress.
Now, our starting point to get here in some ways was President Biden said, hey, this is the debt ceiling. It shouldn't be negotiating leverage for the budget. We'll do that with the budget later this year. So, no, we shouldn't be making a deal at all. Republicans passing that bill you mentioned, which says we should use the debt ceiling as leverage to do a lot of things we want to do that we think we were elected to do with the House. Where did we end up? What are some of the highlights of the deal they ended up reaching somewhere between those two points?
That's right. If you go back and you ask the White House even today, are they negotiating on the debt ceiling? The answer would be no. They would say they're negotiating over spending separately. A parallel track was one of their ways they like to describe it. But it is, in fact, a negotiation to get this debt ceiling bill passed. And what the deal does is it caps spending. So it's going to freeze spending essentially over the next 2 years in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. And it will allow some other key pieces of legislation that they wanted to see passed. So we're talking about permitting reform is a big thing that they have been discussing, getting to an agreement that allows, and permitting reform sounds like, a term that doesn't really clear what it means, but it would allow some energy projects to move more quickly through Congress. So permitting reform is a piece of it, extends the debt limit to 2025. And then it allows for, it stops or doesn't allow for the president to extend the student loan borrowing freeze that has been in place. So it stopped some of those pieces from moving forward, which was already sort of the plan the president had in terms of ending the freeze on student loan payments.
You mentioned extending the debt ceiling to 2025. It's 2023 right now. And well, right between those is the 2024 election. Is that an important factor in why this goes into 2025 so we don't have to deal with this before the election?
Absolutely. I think that if you're any member of Congress and you're watching or the president and you're watching this all play out, the last thing you want to do is probably repeat this, at least if you're Kevin McCarthy or Joe Biden, in the fall of next year or the summer of next year, when you're looking days, weeks away from a presidential election. The sort of partisanship gets really cranked up in Washington in an election year. Sure, it would maybe provide a bit more leverage to some sides. So maybe some rank and file members of the House see it doing it again next year as an opportunity to extract more concessions from the White House. But these things are much more difficult if you try to do them in an election year. And so absolutely it was a factor in these negotiations, getting clear of that election. And then they can also say to their voters, this is what I did. This is what I argued. Send me back to do it again, whether you're Biden or House Republicans. This is something they can talk about to voters when they go out and campaign.
Talking to Ginger Gibson, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital, talking about the debt ceiling deal reached between President Biden, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, now going to votes in the House, probably this evening. You could join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Christine joins us now in Eau Claire. Hi, Christine.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for letting me onto the program. Frankly, as an independent, I'm really frustrated that the news media hasn't done a better job of letting the U.S. Americans know that it's really the Republicans that are being the jerks in this situation. I know that the Democrats had a chance before they lost the House to address this, but Biden gave them the House a budget on March 9th, and McCarthy has been stalling and lying and stalling and lying. And it's just, there are 40 million people in America who are impoverished, and Congress is doing nothing except whatever negotiations are going to affect people who are poor or working class.
Christine, thanks a lot for the call. First of all, Ginger, Christine, putting the blame here on the Republicans over the tightness of this deadline on the debt ceiling.
Well, it's absolutely true that the Republicans are the ones who saw that this offered them leverage. I think there would be a lot of different opinions, and that's one take, about whether or not it was a good thing that they used that leverage. Republicans, conservatives say they should have used more leverage. Democrats wanted to raise the debt ceiling. They should have used all they could to get out even more concessions, more cuts to government funding, more cuts to government programs, that this is the only way they could get something done. Critics, Democrats, probably some independents, like the caller now, would say that this is not an item you should have been taking leverage on, that raising the debt limit isn't authorizing new spending, that this is spending that's already been approved, and that it would be wrong to use this as leverage, that you're risking the economy, people who could lose their jobs if we saw a recession. And then I think we're also going to hear a lot of criticism from Democrats. We've seen Democrats who have said they aren't going to vote for this deal, even though it was negotiated by the president, including folks like Bernie Sanders, who announced today he wasn't going to vote for the bill, who are upset that it could make cuts to some government programs, particularly food stamps. It has a work requirement that would require more people work more hours in order to be eligible for food stamps. And they've long argued, particularly in states that have implemented similar programs, these programs do nothing to help people, but instead take assistance away from sick people, from disabled people, from people who are maybe suffering from drug addictions, and rely on these programs in order to have something to eat.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the debt ceiling and the race in Congress to pass a bill that raises that ceiling before the country, in theory, defaults on its debts starting as soon as next week. Ginger Gibson stays with us, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for our guest? What do you think about the politics at play here, the policies you're hearing about in this conversation? Ultimately, do you want your Wisconsin, a member of Congress, your senators to vote for this debt ceiling extension? Why or why not? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Ginger Gibson, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. We're talking about the bill in Congress to raise the national debt limit. The U.S. House is expected to vote on that tonight. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about what's in this deal and why it's there and what you want to happen. If you want the Wisconsin congressional delegation to support this deal or try to block it, join in at 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ginger, you mentioned some Republicans in the House not happy with the deal. They wanted to get more out of the debt ceiling leverage. This is tied up in how Speaker Kevin McCarthy became Speaker Kevin McCarthy in the first place. Can you talk about how that all ties together?
That's right. We all remember back in January, although it does at times feel like an eon ago, Kevin McCarthy had a really hard time becoming Speaker. It took 13 ballots to get him there. And part of the concern that the real hardliners and his caucus had, even at the time, was what was going to happen when the debt ceiling had to be raised. They wanted promises from McCarthy that he would extract concessions from the administration. So he was making promises to his members in the process of getting elected speaker that he would go hard in these negotiations and that he would produce results for them. And there was always this explicit threat that if he didn't, his job would be terminated. He also agreed at that time to allow the return of what's known as the motion to vacate, which says that any member of the House can stand up on the floor and make a motion to kick the speaker out of that job. That had been removed in an effort to keep sort of small revolts by just little parts of the caucus from happening. He allowed it to come back. I mean, right now, at this point, at 4:49 on Wednesday, it doesn't look like there will be a motion to vacate over this debt ceiling, and it looks like he will weather the storm. But I've learned in Washington to never predict the future. It remains a daily possibility for him, especially as we see a number of Republicans not voting on the procedural motion just now that passed and that have said they won't vote on the bill tonight.
So we got another caller now. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I think that it's mostly political posturing on both sides, really. If there's anybody serious about getting rid of or reducing the debt, Social Security, defense spending, Medicare, Medicaid, all have to be in the conversation, and nobody's willing to do that. So if they're serious, they might look at a national sales tax dedicated to debt reduction only. And then they could, you know, we didn't get in this hole overnight, and it's and we aren't going to get out of it. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Jimmy, thanks a lot for the call. Ginger, Jimmy does a great job of summing up things that are not on the table, never really were on the table in this debt conversation. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, military spending, and increasing taxes. And I think it's hard to reduce the deficit and bring down the overall debt without looking at least some of those things.
That's right. I mean, you look at something like he pointed out, Jimmy pointed out this, a national sales tax. That's a non-starter for both sides. Sales tax, tax as a portion of income, poorer people more than wealthy people. Think about it. If we both go buy a loaf of bread and pay a dollar in taxes, and I make $100 a week and you make $1,000 a week, I've paid more of my income in taxes than the wealthy person, would be the argument Democrats would make against a sales tax. And Republicans are just anti-taxes. So they're not going to approve any new taxes at all. They think we have too many taxes. And that even for something like debt reduction, we shouldn't have more taxes. So I think those were non-starters. Lowering the deficit have been really an issue that a lot of people talk about, but has not been really tackled. We did see McCarthy today talking about a blue ribbon panel or some type of panel to mitigate deficit reduction. That was something he waved off a number of months ago, now seems to be back as an option. And I think it's because finding a solution that is sustainable, I think is the other piece, right? You might get some type of debt reduction in place, some type of idea of debt reduction in place, and our government changes hands. And so 2, 4, 6 years later, a different party's in charge and they undo the plan the other side had to reduce the deficit. So I do think that it's a very complicated long-term problem, and no one thus far has seemed to come up with a way that they think would address it over the long haul.
Thanks a lot for that call. Go to Marlene now in Marshfield. Marlene, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to ask about, Marlene?
Well, I just, I'm concerned. I supervise a team of people for a charitable organization. We assist people who are elderly and disabled. And this whole conversation is putting many people who on a horrific edge. They, you know, live on Social Security or food stamps. They're unable to live independently without that sort of assistance. A lot of very elderly people. And I think this is torturous, and this playing this game of let's crash the system, you know, kind of teasing is cruel, and that it should really be resolved in a different manner than it presently is. Yes, spending should not continue, but it should not be that, yes, when our team is in the favor, we can do this. And when your team, we're going to hold our breath and have daily announcements on television that have a lot of people very concerned about even staying housed. I think it's cruel and should somehow find some other way to address that.
Marlene, thanks a lot for that call. A couple ways I want to look at that, Ginger. First of all, the notion that if we didn't end up with a debt ceiling increase, there has been concern that the people that Marlene is talking about, people receiving Social Security or food stamps, well, they might be on the list of things that government wouldn't be able to pay. Was that, is that a concern if the debt ceiling isn't raised?
I think that is a concern, and I would take it one step further. I mean, I think that there's a discussion being had in Washington about whether there should be a debt ceiling at all. One sort of thread through all of this debate and discussion was whether the White House could invoke the 14th Amendment, as it was being said, which says in it that the debts of the United States should not be questioned. There has been a lot of legal arguments that that means that there shouldn't even be a debt ceiling, that there's the Constitution says that they can't be questioned, that they could just raise that debt, you know, amount as Treasury saw fit. There is a real possibility that we could see the president, after this is resolved, try to do away with the debt ceiling forever. Forget 2 years, try for through the end of time. The president has acknowledged a number of times that that conversation was going to, that option was going to require a lot of legal litigation, that he thought the courts would get involved and there would be a question about whether or not it was constitutional. And that made it really not a practical option in the moment right now, because they would default before they could answer those questions. But I wouldn't rule it out. People who argue that, you know, playing with the debt ceiling, running into questions about whether or not someone's Social Security check or veterans disability check is going to show up next week, really is a reason to just do away with the whole thing, that we're the United States and that nobody else in the developed world has a debt ceiling and that we should just get rid of it. In fact, maybe we already did the 14th Amendment and we should just acknowledge it.
Thanks for that call, Marlene. And then zooming in on this deal, you mentioned earlier, Ginger, this idea of work requirements for people receiving food assistance and other forms of assistance. More work requirements for some people up to age 55. But for some people, I believe, including veterans, the requirements would actually be loosened so that the deal might not affect the people Marlene's working with so much. Do I have that right?
That's right. So there are some changes. In fact, the Congressional Budgeting Office came out last night and said, actually, maybe those changes would result in more people being eligible for food stamps and it costing the government more, not less, and it isn't a savings. We had a story a couple of weeks ago looking at some of those changes, not all of them, but some similar versions that have been enacted in states. Places like Arkansas have done some similar things. And figuring out the effects is really complicated because some people think they've lost their benefits and they haven't, or they don't know how to apply for exemptions because they hear they're supposed to work now and they're not, or they can't, and they just say, well, I guess I don't know how to navigate the bureaucracy of an exemption. That means I don't get any more benefits. So I think we're going to see people paying close attention to whether or not this affects disabled veterans, this affects people who are really incapable of working, who might not be able to figure out the paperwork that's going to take for them to keep their benefits.
Ginger, I want to take our last minute and a half or so to look at what's next. As you mentioned, some rules, hurdles being cleared now. Vote expected tonight. If the House does pass this, and it seems like it's leaning that way, what's the timeline from here on out?
That's right. So they passed this vote, this rules vote, just as I was getting on the air with you. So that's done. And that's normally a pretty good indication that they're going to have the votes to pass it, we think, after 8 o'clock tonight. And then next it goes to the Senate. And at first we saw some threatening from some senators that they might try to block it or delay the bill because they were unhappy with it. And they sort of backed down, Senator Lee saying they're going to let him have a vote on an amendment and that will get him on board and he won't try to block it or delay things. So could happen on Friday, could happen on Saturday, could happen on Sunday, but it looks like the Senate is on track once the likeliness that the House sends it over to them this evening.
And just our last minute now, Ginger, if the House for some reason votes it down tonight or doesn't end up with the votes, well, then what?
Well, I would not look at your 401k in the moment, in the morning, if the House votes this down. But there will definitely be a scramble. There will be a lot of scrambling on the Hill to figure out what they need to do to get the votes, and whether or not Democrats and Republicans could figure out a new path forward. I would just stay off your 401k website until they figure it out. That would be my suggestion.
Ginger, we'll leave it there. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Ginger Gibson, senior Washington editor for NBC News Digital. She joined us for a look at the latest on this bill in Congress aimed at raising the debt ceiling. Keep following the news. You can listen here, of course, on the Ideas Network. Watch WPR.org for ongoing reporting from our friends at NPR. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, most mask rules have gone away in the United States, but how about in healthcare settings? Kate and her guests look at calls for universal masking in hospitals and clinics. And of course, you can weigh in and you can do it right now, ideas@WPR.org. If you've been a patient in a healthcare setting or you work in one, what are you seeing around you when it comes to mask use? What do you wish you saw? What do you think the rules should be? Email ideas@WPR.org. Join the conversation tomorrow at 7. If you wear blue jeans, and I do, this month is a milestone. It marks the 150th anniversary of the patent for the first pair of modern blue jeans by a Nevada tailor named Jacob Davis and the money man, a store owner named Levi Strauss. By 1873, people had been wearing denim for a long time already. The innovation was adding metal rivets for the buttons to help them last longer. Two related pieces of pants news from over the last year, a pair of Levi jeans from the 1880s found in an abandoned mine was auctioned for over $87,000. And last year, archaeologists created a new model of the oldest known surviving pair of pants. The original was worn in what is now Western China over 3,000 years ago. If they last 3,000 years and we know how to make them again, let's get them onto those store shelves. Pants news you can use. This is Central Time.